This is Stateside from Michigan Radio. I'm Lester Graham.
So it's going to read from the handle here over this way. So it starts with your Sacred Cow, you've got your Farisee Stout, the Buzzsaw IPA, and then the Strawberry Blonde here.
That sounds great.
And I will be back with your flight. It's the exact same lineup.
I'm at Arbor Brewing Company in Ann Arbor, and sitting across from me in the booth is William Rapai. He's the author of a new book titled Brewed in Michigan, the New Golden Age of Brewing in the Great Beer State. How's it going?
I'm happy to be here. Thank you very much for having me.
I am too. These flights look really nice. I'm going to start sipping a little bit. Let's talk about Michigan beer in general. I mean, there are a lot of states with a lot of good breweries. What makes Michigan different?
Well, for starters, it's the water. We have terrific water to work with. Second, it's the ingenuity of the Michigan brewers. These are creative people. And third, it's the passion. They want to make beer as good as they can. They wake up in the morning, they think, what am I going to do today to make a great beer? They go to bed at night thinking, what am I going to do to make that beer even better tomorrow? They have left jobs where they were working behind desks, they were doing all kinds of professional jobs, and they said, no, I would really prefer to be making beer. And they just followed their passions.
I think a lot of people who drink Michigan craft beer, kind of after a while decide, you know, California's got some good stuff, different places have some good stuff, I'm drinking Michigan beer. And that's, they just stick with it, because there's such a wide variety, and there's loyalty there, it seems like to me.
There's a tremendous amount of loyalty, because this is what we do. It's become part of the soul of our state, and part of our identity is because we make such tremendous beer.
It makes sense that you visited with Larry Bell of Bell's Brewery. He's one of the earliest brewers and one of the most successful. But tell me about Ben Edwards.
Ben Edwards was the owner of Traffic Jam and Snug, a restaurant in Detroit, just south of Wayne State University. And in the late 1980s, he decided that he wanted to be able to provide his restaurant patrons with beer. He was already making bread and dairy products, one of the really early purveyors of the farm-to-market movement. He really wanted to be able to provide the freshest possible products to his restaurant goers. So he decided that he wanted to have beer as one of the items that he could offer, but he couldn't, because the way the state had set up the beer distribution, you could not be a brewer and a seller at the same time. It was an antitrust thing, and it made sense, so that way nobody could control the beer price of beer. So he sued the state of Michigan. He was unsuccessful initially, and then he got some help from a couple of Michigan state legislators, and in 1992, the state law changed that allowed brew on premises so that somebody could make beer and sell it in the same location.
This book begins with a nice lesson, an entertaining one, but still, it's a lesson on how beer is made, what goes into it, and so forth. Why do you think that was important or necessary for the book?
Beer is essentially made with four ingredients: water, yeast, hops, and barley malt. And you can take those four ingredients and make a very plain beer, or you can take those four ingredients and you can make something really, really outstanding and different and unusual just by the way the types of barleys you use, or you add wheat, or you add some other agricultural product like asparagus or melons or cucumbers. So these things are the starting points for brewers, and a lot of brewers are simply happy making their beer with those four ingredients. But a lot of them look at beer as being something that like an empty palate. They want to be creative. They want to express themselves, their creativity, through their beer.
I understand that they love this. They really want to do it, and they have a great time because it's, art and chemistry all together. But I also know that they're using a lot of Michigan ingredients, and suddenly people are growing hops and barley that who never thought about growing those kinds of crops before.
It's just changed the face of agriculture in Michigan. People are now growing hops all over the state. As a matter of fact, a former neighbor of mine in Grosse Pointe left Grosse Pointe. He bought a farm in the Thumb where he started growing hops. He just loves making his own beer. Before too much longer, he not only was he making his own hops, he opened his own brew pub in Sandusky up in the Thumb. You drive up north to near Traverse City, and you just see these huge hop farms up there, and they're making high-quality hops. The wonderful thing about Michigan hops, though, is that, like grapes, if you take a grape from California and you transplant it someplace else, it picks up the flavor of the earth around it. And so Michigan hops are not only getting to the brewers fresh, but they have their own unique qualities.
Craft brewing in Michigan is it basically dominated by men, but you made a point of noting some of the women brewers in Michigan. Tell me about them and the group they created, Fermenta.
So Fermenta got underway when Stacy Roth, who's now the a brewer at Griffin Claw in Birmingham, got together with Pauline Lighton, who was a beer liberator, a representative, sales representative for Shorts. And they got together a few years ago, and they realized that they had a lot in common and that there were other women in the state who really could use a boost to become part of the beer scene. You got to remember, historically, brewing was women's work. While men were out doing things in the field or whatever, women were home making beer. And then all of a sudden, it became men's work when the monks took over and women were not allowed in breweries because it was thought that they had some mysterious power that would prevent beer from fermenting properly. So women were kept away from breweries for a long, long time. And it's great to see Michigan brewers like Duncan Williams down the street at Grizzly Peak, who is actively promoting women in the business.
You note that the Michigan brewers watch out for each other. And what you called it was collaboration. In what ways do they help each other? And why?
Talking to one of the brewery owners, Bill, out at Dragonmead, I said, Bill, how do brewers get together? I mean, how do they work together? He said, if I needed a bag of malt, all I had to do was pick up the phone to somebody, one of my brewers around the state, and say, I need a bag of malt. They would say, when do you need it? They work together. They collaborate to make better beer. They get together to make sure that their equipment are working properly. They share tips. They're really, really a tight group because they know that if somebody's making a bad beer or a substandard beer, that it reflects badly on all of them. I remember the first time I had a Michigan craft beer. It was many, many years ago, right after the state law was changed. And I drank it and I said, oh my goodness, this is bad. And it took me a long, long time for me to come back to drinking Michigan beer.
You feature a lot of craft brewers and breweries across the state of Michigan, but you couldn't fit them all in. So how did you decide who made it into the book and who did not?
Well, early on, I talked to the Coonan brothers, Brett and Eric out in Warren. And these guys have been around the state for a long time. They know everybody in the state. I said, who in this book should I be talking to? Who were the early pioneers? Who are the people who are really making great beers? And who are the people who are building the Michigan beer community? And they gave me a list of people, and that's really the starting point. But once I began to talk to more people, they were like, you know who you need to talk to? You need to talk to so-and-so over there. Do not miss him because he's going to provide you with tremendous stories, really great insight about how Michigan craft beer is growing.
Yeah, I didn't even know a lot of these breweries even existed. Maybe I've been to a fourth of them that you listed, and that's over 15 years. You've went to a whole lot of them in 18 months. How was that?
It was fun. I had a great time, because I love beer. I've always been curious about beer. Even as a young person here in college and grad school in Ann Arbor, I would always seek out different kinds of beer. Unfortunately, at that time, it was pretty much a fizzy yellow beer or a lighter version of that fizzy yellow beer. It took a long time for beer tastes to change, and now that they're changing, we're beginning to mature, we're seeking out new and different kinds of beers and beer styles, and it's really tremendous to be able to have all these different things to try.
As I understand it, there's something like 300 breweries across the state. Are we at a point where we're peaking, or is there further growth to be had? Is it going to be like Starbucks, a brewery on every corner?
I hope it's not that ubiquitous, but yes, I think there's further growth to be had simply because you can have large production breweries like Bell's and Founders and Shorts, or you can have a small brewery on a street corner that simply serves its community. Think about a place like Stormcloud in Frankfurt. It's just a small little place on Main Street, but people come from miles around just to be at Stormcloud because they make good beer, and there's a real sense of community there.
You mentioned that these brew pubs seem to be a lot more communal. It's not like a bar where you walk in, it's dark, there's some guy who's kind of ticked off at the world at the end of the bar or whatever. This is a place where people bring their families, they bring their kids in. It's very much a moment of sharing this love of Michigan ales.
And it's not just sharing the love of Michigan ale. It's just a very nice places that are very comfortable and family friendly. If you go to some place like Corner Brewery in Ypsilanti on a Saturday afternoon, you'll see wagons and tricycles and things parked outside where people go in and they have family lunch together. Over in Muskegon at Pigeon Hill, there'll be birthday parties inside the brewery. They'll order pizza, bring it in because they don't sell food. They'll order pizza and bring it in, and there'll be a birthday party inside the brewery, and the people at the brewery are like, yeah, come on, please come join us, let's do this.
Okay, 18 months on the road, lots of breweries. What beer knocked your socks off?
Ooh, you really the over at Cedar Springs Brewing Company in Cedar Springs, David Ringler spent some time playing American football in Germany. And in the off season, he worked in German breweries. And when he came back to the U.S., he got involved in the financial services industry, but he always wanted to open a brewery. So finally, he opens his brewery in Cedar Springs, and he uses his knowledge that he gained from working in German breweries, and he's just making some tremendous German-style beers there. The Hefeweizen is just terrific. The Kirster Hefeweizen is an outstanding beer. I still think my favorite beer in the state is Final Absolution from Dragon Mead, because the first time that I had that, I swear the clouds parted and angels sang. I had never had anything quite like that. We at our house, default beer in the summer is Oberon. Default beer in the winter is Two Hearted Ale. But you'll never know what you'll find in our refrigerator.
You know, none of this would have happened if consumer taste hadn't changed in a really dramatic way and pretty quickly. What caused beer drinkers to switch from Bud Light, Coors, and Miller products to IPAs, stouts, and wheat beers?
I don't know if there was any one thing that caused them to change their tastes. I think it was just an awakening. When brewers began to open small places like this that are comfortable and they could offer their own beer, people could come in and say, hey, wait a minute, this beer's different, but it's pretty good. I like this. Eventually, people all around the state began to realize that there was an alternative to fizzy yellow beers.
William Rapai is the author of the book Brewed in Michigan, The New Golden Age of Brewing in the Great Beer State. It's put out by Wayne State University Press. Thanks for having a beer with me.
Well, thank you very much.
That would have been the end of the interview, but William Rapai had a tip you might find interesting.
So this is the Michael Pharisee Stout. One of the things I always do before I drink a beer is I will sit and smell it. I will bring it up to my nose. I'll give it away. And so, you know, I smell this wonderful biscuity, roasty smell. And that is one of the things that brewers really want drinkers to do, is to not just take a beer and guzzle it down. They want them to, you know, sit there and look at it, look at the color. I mean, think about the color spectrum that we have here. This, from a lighter beer to this, you know, really dark stout. And then, you know, as you pick them up, you smell them. You know, this is all piney. And you know, you've got a strawberry here. It's just fascinating to pick these up and smell them and then go on to taste them. You know, smelling them is part of the wonderful thing about drinking them.